Hope you're enjoying this series as we push our way through the Gospel of Luke. It's fantastic. And tonight we're looking at a passage there. We're going to be zeroing in on the passage we just had read, verse 18 through to 27. And really in this passage, the big thing that happens, the big thing that comes out is Jesus' true identity. That's what the focus on is. Who really is Jesus? And if there's one question you want to get right, if there's one question you want to answer right in this life, it's that one. Who do you reckon Jesus is? And what do you mean by that? Because a lot of people say certain things about Jesus, but dig into the meaning of the answer that they give. It's really important. Recently, they dug up Ned Kelly's bones and they proved that it was really him. I'm not sure if you're aware of what was going on there. And they actually gave Ned Kelly a proper burial, or they gave his bones a proper burial. But there was a bit of a controversy that came up with the government, I think, giving him a burial. And the debate was over whether we ought to be celebrating a figure like Ned Kelly. You know, and so the question's raised, who do you think Ned Kelly is? You know, is he a hero or is he just a cop killer? You know, and the debate was kind of raging. In fact, I wouldn't mind hearing what you guys reckon. Who reckons he's a hero? Okay. And who reckons he's a cop killer? And a bunch of you are just uncommitted, aren't you? Just sitting in that safe middle ground, yeah? That's the safe place, isn't it? I remember tuning into Talkback Radio, as you do, you know, tune into Talkback Radio. And the debate was really fierce, you know. Some of us going, there's no way we should be celebrating. He kills cops, da da da, and really angry. And it was almost as though it mattered what you thought of Ned Kelly, what you really think of him. But in the end, no matter where you land, what kind of consequences does it have on you and your life? Not really much, yeah. You might have a friend who disagrees with you, but that's probably about as far as it will go. Whereas this question, what you think of Jesus, actually has enormous consequences on your life. I'd say it has consequences that actually ring on throughout all of eternity. So who do you think Jesus is? I had a good chat with Chris Hartcher the other day. Quick chat, but a good chat. He's one of the politicians. And I bumped into him recently at one of our local primary schools. And he was giving out medals for, you know, school captains and sports captains and things like that, as you do. And I had a quick cup of tea with him in the staff room, not just me and him, but I bailed him up in the corner, started pumping him with questions. And now politicians are usually pretty good at avoiding, you know, the question and just keeping things general when they want to. But he was happy to go right to the guts of what I wanted to talk about. So good bloke. I like him. And so really, I wanted to know what he believed. And he volunteered really quickly. Yeah, he was a believer in Jesus. He was a Catholic. And I said, oh, what kind of Catholic are you? Because you kind of need to clarify that. He said, well, I'm an active Catholic. And he said, I'm kind of a newer kind of Catholic, Vatican II Catholic, not old school Catholic. And do you know what he means by Vatican II? As opposed to, here's what he means by Vatican II. Even though you believe, well, previous to Vatican II, the church would say that the Catholic Church said there's no salvation outside of the Catholic Church. But then that was revised to say, no, actually, Vatican II revised it and kind of blew it really wide open and said, actually, many faiths are valid paths towards salvation. And so even though Chris Hartcher said, no, I'm a believer in Jesus, and he said that's his belief, he was ultimately saying, but I acknowledge that all faiths lead to God, and really in the end, as long as people are leading people to God, it doesn't matter who it is. So in the end, he was happy to volunteer exactly what he thought. And it is a bit of a safe middle ground. I can understand the pressure on a politician to need to kind of, you know, acknowledge all faiths. The previous week, he was down in Sydney at a Muslim school giving medals out there. So you can imagine it's kind of hard ground for him to be in. So what does Chris Hartcher believe about Jesus? Well, he believed Jesus was the thing that he believed in, the way to get to heaven, but he acknowledges ultimately really that it's not like everyone needs to believe that. So what does he think of Jesus? Well, he would say, he didn't say this, but ultimately he's thinking Jesus is one of the ways, one of the paths, but there's nothing really particularly special about him. Who do you say Jesus is? One of the ways to heaven? nice guy, prophet? Because the way you answer that question is fundamentally important. Jesus makes claims about himself in the passage we're looking here, or at least agrees with an answer that's given to him about who he is. And he would go on to say, and he says it in verse 26, that the way you answer the question about who I am ultimately will impact all of eternity on Judgment Day. So tune in there with me at verse 18. He's with his disciples, and he asks them, who do the crowds say that I am? Verse 18. Now, why is he asking them, who do the crowds say him? He's not insecure about what people think of him, but he's very interested. You could say it's a very key thing to Jesus, what people think of him. And what do the crowds say? Well, he gets the answer that it's kind of picked up earlier as well when Herod's investigating the question of what do people think of this Jesus character. Jesus has been doing some pretty incredible miracles at this time, and his popularity has been going through the roof. I mean, previous to this passage we're looking at, we get the feeding of the 5,000. That kind of thing doesn't happen without the word spreading and people scratching their heads and going, who is this bloke? And so the question's being asked, who is this man, Jesus? And so Jesus asks his disciples, who are people saying I am? And the answer he gets is, well, some people say John the Baptist, even though he's already been beheaded. Some people say that you're him, come back to life. Some people say that you're Elijah, the prophet. Others say you're one of the prophets from long ago, come back to life. Now, there's a lot of discussion about exactly what's being inferred by suggesting those kind of people, and you can go round and round in circles a little bit. But the basic concept is people think he's definitely got to be someone pretty special. All those guys are significant figures in the history, recent and long-term history. So everyone's thinking he's someone special. He's either one of the prophets come back to life. But all of these three, John the Baptist, Elijah, and a prophet long ago raised back from the dead, all fall into one category, and that is everybody's thinking he is the prefigure before the Messiah comes. Meaning this, everyone's thinking that he's special, but he's not the one. He's one of the ones who's going to come before the Christ, the Messiah, comes. That's what all those have got in common. A pre-Messiah. Someone who comes before the real guy comes. So that's the answer. No one's thinking he's the real deal. No one's thinking he's the final one. Everyone's thinking he's just one of the special ones who would come before the Christ. And now Jesus turns to his disciples and he says, what do you reckon? And the you there is really emphatic. It's like, yeah, but what do you reckon? Because what matters is for you is what you reckon. So who do you say I am? And Peter, either because I don't think he's the official spokesman for the disciples, he's just usually the first one to open his mouth and dive in, sometimes put his foot in his mouth. But he jumps in and speaks on behalf of the disciples. He says, I'll tell you who we think you are. Have a look at it, verse 20. Peter answered, the Christ of God. Christ meaning, that's a title. Christ meaning Messiah. And you unpack that, and you find out that, so some of you have always known the name Jesus Christ, but Christ is not Jesus' last name that he happened to be born with. Christ is the title that's given to Jesus. Jesus, the Christ. And Peter here says, you're the Christ of God. What does Christ mean? Literally means anointed one. There have been many anointed ones in the past. All kings and prophets were anointed. But what they're saying now by saying, no, you are the Christ of God, meaning you are the anointed one. The one we've been waiting for through history. You're the deliverer that has come. The one special one who's been set aside to save God's people and rescue God's people. And Jesus, without actually saying, yes, you've got it right, he says effectively, yes, that's it, you got it right. That's who I am. I am the Christ of God. I am the anointed deliverer who was promised to come and rescue God's people. It's me. He kind of infers that by the next verse. In fact, in other gospel accounts, he affirms it far more deliberately and clearly. But in this one, he at least says, Jesus strictly warned them not to tell anyone. In other words, shh, yep, you got it, shh. keep it on the lowdown. Now, there's different theories as to why Jesus was telling them to keep it on the lowdown and not tell anyone about it. John's gospel gives us the best indication of why Jesus might have been doing that. It's a timing thing. Jesus often said to people, okay, don't tell everyone who I am because my time has not yet come. Jesus was controlling the timing of when he would arrive and die on the cross. And he knew that when the word got out that he actually claimed to be the Christ, all of the opposition would heat up and he would be taken directly to the cross. And he's controlling the timing. So he's saying, just don't tell anyone just yet. But he's saying, yes, this is who I am. You see it clearer in the other Gospels. Don't tell anyone. Now, the disciples got the title right, but they didn't get the meaning right. They got the "you're the Christ" bit, but then Jesus launches into the meaning of the Christ, and it's really different from what the disciples had thought the Christ meant, and it's kind of clear. So they got the title right, but their understanding of the Christ was wrong. And they missed it. And I just, right off the bat, I kind of want to say that it may be possible that you can answer the question, who is Jesus? Oh, Savior, Lord, you can get that out. But what do you mean by that? Do you have the correct understanding of Savior, Lord? Do you have the correct understanding of Christ? Because even Jesus' disciples didn't get it to start with. So I want to ask that question. You got the understanding right? Because Jesus corrects their understanding. In verse 22, he says, okay, here's what this title, Christ, means for me. And then verse 23 to 27, he says, here's what the title of me being Christ means for you guys if you want to follow me. You got to get the answer right and get the right understanding of the answer. Okay, both those two things. Now, here's what I want to suggest the disciples thought Christ meant. And what I reckon a huge majority of Jewish people in the first century were expecting of the Christ. They're expecting this, a deliverer, but a deliverer who would be like a political and a military leader. Someone who would come and actually be the deliverer, but in a physical sense, deliver God's people. That would be their primary understanding of what it meant to be the Christ, the anointed king, the one who was going to come and rescue his people. He'd be the one who'd come and give them physical deliverance and physical victory over their enemies. That's what they're expecting. So when they say, yeah, Jesus, you are the Christ of God, that I want to put to you is what they had in mind. And they had that in mind because of references in the Old Testament about who the Christ would be and clinging to a really physical sense of those promises. You kind of can't blame them in some sense for holding that view. But Jesus comes and actually says, no, you're off kilter, come back on. Now, why are they looking for a Christ who would come and do that? Well, they're living under the oppressive Roman regime. And so they're thinking now would be a good time for the Christ to come and deliver us, yeah? Overthrow the oppressive occupation of Rome and reestablish Israel in the land. And you can kind of see almost what's going on for the disciples. They think they've got the guy right in front of them, this political military leader who's going to overthrow the Roman Empire, and they are his special men. So they're starting to think we're pretty special too. You actually pick up later on in the chapter that they are having arguments about who's the greatest. You know, and you think, what are they thinking? Why are they having discussions about who's the greatest? But it's literally happening like this. Well, when it all goes down, I want to sit on Jesus' right-hand side and you can sit on his left. No, I'm sitting on his right, you're on his left. I'm greater in this posse and he's out. They're thinking this is all about Jesus coming to be this great figure and they think they're getting swept up in the greatness and they're just thinking it's going to be fantastic. That's what's going on in their minds. And Jesus kind of blows it all up. He says, actually, I've come to bring deliverance, all right, but a far greater deliverance than simply physical deliverance. I've come to bring spiritual deliverance, ultimate deliverance, which will impact all of eternity. I've come to overthrow, all right. I've come to overthrow the oppression of sin, not the Roman Empire. And I've come to reestablish people, all right, but I've come to reestablish God's people in relationship with him by offering forgiveness, not just reestablish them in the land. Jesus goes, I'm the deliverer in the ultimate physical sense. And actually what that's going to mean for me in an ultimate spiritual sense, you with me? And what that actually, and Jesus says, what that's actually going to mean for me in a physical sense is humiliation and destruction. Jesus says, I'm the Christ, all right, but it's not physical deliverance. It's going to mean physical humiliation and destruction. Jesus is basically saying, I'm the Christ, and I'll tell you what that means for me. It means a cross for me and a cross for you if you're going to follow me. Now, the disciples are just not handling this very well when Jesus is kind of dropping this bomb on them. And one of the other Gospels, actually Matthew's Gospel, he shows it really clearly that Peter is obviously not handling what Jesus is saying here by saying that for him to be the Christ, he's going to go to the cross and you're going to have to go to the cross too. Peter's thinking, no, you got it wrong. And Peter, I'll read it to you. Peter in Matthew's Gospel literally says, never, Lord. He actually rebukes Jesus, pulls him aside and goes, no, Jesus, you've got this Christ thing wrong. He rebukes Jesus, takes him aside and rebukes him. Never, Lord, this shall never happen to you. You are not going to the cross. I don't know where you got that idea from, but I'll tell you what's actually happening. And Jesus turns to Peter and says, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. Jesus is saying, Peter, your understanding of the Christ is all about the things of men. It's all about things for yourself. You got it wrong, brother. He says, he calls Peter Satan. In other words, the way you're thinking is satanic. It's an enemy to God. Peter's not dealing with it. Peter's not dealing with what it actually meant for Jesus to be the Christ. And he obviously hasn't got in his mind what it's going to mean for him to follow the Christ. Because Jesus goes on and actually explains really clearly that's going to mean that he's going to have to pick up his cross too. But just beginning with what Jesus says about a cross for him, have a look at verse 22 where Jesus is basically saying, this is going to mean a cross for me. And he said, the Son of Man must suffer many things. This is one of the first times Jesus calls himself the Son of Man in Luke's Gospel. The Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, and he must be killed and on the third day raised again to life. Jesus is very clear about what this is going to mean for him. For me to be the Christ means I'm going to be rejected by my own countrymen, the leaders of the Jewish faith, God's own people. I'm going to be rejected by them. I'm going to suffer a mistrial. I'm going to be brutally beaten. I'm going to suffer the humiliation, and I'm going to die. I'm going to be killed. I'm going to be executed because I'm the Christ. That's how this is going to roll. And before we seem to think that Jesus found that an easy thing to handle, reflect with me on what was going through Jesus' mind and heart as he considered what it meant for him to be the Christ. Other Gospels will give the account of Jesus just hours before he's actually arrested, where he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he's actually burdened by what it's going to mean for him to be the Christ. He knows exactly what is ahead of him. He doesn't let these words just roll off his tongue easily. Hey, I'm going to die. No. We actually get told that Jesus actually says of himself, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death, when he's just considering what it's going to mean for him to go to the cross. He actually cries out to God the Father and says, Father, if it's possible, may this cup be taken from me. Meaning, Father, is there any other way this can happen? Jesus is so troubled by the cross that he cries out to God in the final moments, God, is there any way, any other way that your people can be delivered from their sin? But then he follows that with these beautiful, humble words, which I think hold the key to the nature of Christianity, where Jesus in that moment says, yet not my will, but as you will. But this is not about me, this is about you and your purposes and your will. Humility, submission, denial of self, to go about the things of God. He's troubled by it. But in the end, there's no other way for the Christ to deliver people from their sin than for him to go to the cross and die and bear their sin and deal with their sin. and then rise again, having the victory over it. And so Jesus goes to the cross. Jesus understands that for him to be the Christ, it means a cross for him. And then he turns to his disciples and actually addresses us in that, because he says, anyone who wants to follow me, anyone who wants to come after me, you need to understand, it's a cross for you too. We've got to get the nature of Christianity right. We cannot expect to follow a Christ who goes to the cross and not step into a life that's anything like that. That is what we would like, yeah? Have a look at what he says. Verse 23. Then he said to them all, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Now, this imagery can be lost on us slightly, because you don't walk down the street here in Erina and see someone hanging, being executed on the cross. We just don't see that. Okay, but we do get some of the horror of the cross. It would not have been missed on them, the disciples, as Jesus says, no, you got to pick up your cross daily too. The cross is a horrid and heavy image. It's a man condemned to die, publicly humiliated, laboring under the weight of the cross that he's got to drag to his own execution and then die. And Jesus says, no, you're going to follow me. It's about denying yourself and taking up your cross every day. Now, what does that mean? Well, it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor. Jesus is not saying, you guys are literally going to need to be crucified just like I am. Though, many Christians have been prepared to go to their death and have gone to their death in order to follow Jesus. And we just would never expect that kind of thing to happen in our country, but we do not know the future. And it may be that you find yourself in a situation where you are actually called to either continue your allegiance with Jesus, and what that's going to mean for you is death, or to deny him and live. Who knows? Certainly has been the case for many Christians. It is the case right now for Christians in other countries who are dying for the sake of following Jesus. But when Jesus speaks here about a cross, it's primarily a metaphor. And we know it's a metaphor because he talks about doing it daily. So it couldn't be a real cross, otherwise you're dead and that's it. No, this is something you pick up every day and you do. Something you choose to do. So it's not literally that. And it's not literally because it's not like we actually pick up a cross and go to the cross and die like Jesus did, in that we bear other people's sin and offer forgiveness to others. It's not that. Don't be confused. So how is it a cross like Jesus' cross? How is the cross that we're called to bear like the one that Jesus bared? Well, Jesus is basically saying, follow me and live like me. In the very same way that I needed to deny myself in order to go about the will of God, I need to lay myself aside and do the will of the Father. Follow me in that. Put yourself aside. Lay yourself down. And the picture is, for the Christian to follow Jesus, the picture is willing, daily self-denial for the sake of God. And that's the nature of the Christian walk. Willing, daily self-denial for the sake of God. Now, some of you may be sitting here thinking, that just sounds ludicrous. Like, what kind of a sales pitch is that, mate? You know, like, some of you guys are thinking, you're going to come in here tonight and they were going to try and talk me into being one of those Christians. And here I am saying, it's about bearing a cross. It sounds ludicrous. Who would choose to live like this? Who would choose to follow a man who died and then said, to come after me, you've got to die too? Oh, this is what we've got to dig into. Because this is the glory and the beauty of the Christian life, actually. Is Jesus saying we need to be masochist in some way? Just go after pain? Punish ourselves? No. Because ultimately, to deny yourself here is to actually get life like you otherwise would never get it. And this is the path to getting it. Denying yourself. The one who would choose to live like this, deny himself and pick up his cross, is the one who really wants to live and will end up saving his soul. That's how it rolls. Let's dig into it. Jesus gives us a little riddle to help us get our heads around it. Although riddles can kind of spin you off in any direction. I'm not sure if any of you are good at riddles. I'm calling it a riddle because it sounds like a riddle to me. Look at verse 24. Help me with this one. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever wants to lose his life for me will save it. Now that just does not make sense on one level. Whoever wants to lose his life, sorry, I'm getting confused already. Whoever wants to save his life, you're going to lose it. But if you lose your life, you're going to save it. So the first line kind of says, whatever you do, don't try and save your life, because if you try and save your life, you're going to lose it. So I'm thinking, okay, all right, I'm not trying to save my life, otherwise I'd lose it. And then he goes, no, no, but if you lose it, you're going to save it. And I'm thinking, oh, good, so I do want to save my life. So there's two save your lives in here, and they're kind of different. We need to unpack, we need to tease them apart, because they're two different kinds of saving life. It's a riddle. But can I just point out two words in this riddle, which I think just kind of is the key to understanding the riddle? For me. You see those two little words? Whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever wants to lose, whoever loses his life for me will save it. I reckon that's the key. And if you've got a pen on you and you're okay about underlining words in your Bible, it's okay to do it, I think. Underline those two little words, for me. It helps us get this. To try and save your life, I think this is what's being said. To try and save your life is to do this, is to simply live to get the best out of life for yourself. If you simply live to get the best out of life for yourself, it's going to backfire. And you're actually going to miss out on life. You're not going to get the life that you're longing for. You can actually lose the life while trying to desperately cling to it and save it. Whereas, if you stop trying to live to get the best out of life for yourself, if you stop trying to live that way, if you let go of the obsession of trying to live that way, you actually get it. You get life. It's a paradox. It's the paradox of the Christian life. It's kind of confusing. But just because it's confusing, don't tune off. It's worth digging in and trying to get what Jesus is working on for us here. And I would say it's those two little words, for me, are completely key. Whoever actually chooses to lose his life, which is to deny yourself, for me, gets life. So it's not simply just talking about this general principle of just deny yourself and it's lovely. Because there are many people in this world who deny themselves for many different causes. But Jesus says, here's the cause. Deny yourself for me and you will get life. What does Jesus mean by that? I want to suggest this. He means deny yourself to get me. Lay down yourself to follow me. Give up on working hard day and night to get the best out of life for yourself in order to pursue the cause of my kingdom, and you get me. This is the big thing. Let go of yourself, get Jesus, and you get life. And I actually think it's hard to get our heads around. It may be because I'm not explaining it, but this is hard to get our heads around because it's completely opposite to what comes naturally to us. What comes naturally to us, well, tell me if it's just me. My default setting is to automatically think, how is this situation good for me? What can I get out of this situation? This decision I've got to make, it comes very naturally to think about myself and getting the best for myself. And so to be told, no, stop thinking about yourself. Put yourself aside. Stop thinking about what's best for you. That's just it's a really radical concept. You can get a little glimpse of it for a moment, but then it just disappears really quickly. So we need to spend some time fleshing it out, making some suggestions, pulling some examples. Those of you who I've chatted to who have thrown this around in your growth group this week, as I've said to you, what kind of examples did you come up with? What do you actually reckon it means to deny yourself? By and large, everyone I spoke to said, oh, we didn't actually really get into the detail of that too much. Because it's one thing for us to go, yeah, good, got it. Follow Jesus, deny yourself. Excellent, let's go on. But it's another thing to actually bury into the details of what that life looks like. What does a life look like where you deny yourself? I want to dig into that a bit. I want to churn it up a little bit. And I can't give you black and white examples, but I want to give you a whole heap of them. I'll get to them in just a minute. I think it's this. It's learning to say no to yourself and yes to God. It's learning to say no to wanting to save this life for myself and get everything I possibly can to get the ultimate life of happiness for myself, which is ultimately to be self-centered and to gain, try to gain the world for myself. I need to start saying no to that. Because to follow Jesus means saying no to that. He unpacks that a little bit more in verse 25. This kind of helps us understand the riddle more. Look at verse 25. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit his very self? In other words, it's possible to go after life and gain the whole world. It is, and that's usually what we attempt to do without even trying to articulate it. We're trying to gain the world. You're trying to gain the very best from the world for yourself. The very best kind of finances you can figure out. The very best in relationships. The very best in absolutely everything we can get out of this world. And Jesus says, it's possible to gain everything. It's possible to get heaps, but lose your very self. And I hear that and I think, well, I don't want to lose myself. I don't want to lose the core of life. I want that. I want that to get saved. And Jesus seems to be teasing those apart and saying, you got to start saying no to pursuing life for yourself because it just doesn't work with following Jesus. And I got a hunch we're just continually trying to get it to work together. Would love it if we could just pursue Jesus and get everything else that everyone else is getting in the world. And Jesus is going, no, you just got to stop thinking like that. That is not the nature of the Christian life. That's not what it means to follow me. You got to start learning how to deny yourself and say no to going after things for yourself. Now, some of you are looking at me going, what on earth does that mean? Is he saying we need to become monks, you know, pursue aestheticism and go and just sit on top of a pole and make sure we don't enjoy anything in life? Is he saying we better make sure I never laugh or enjoy a relationship or love? No, no. But our tendency is to go after those things because we think life is in those things. And so Jesus uses extreme language here to say, you got to start saying no and come after the real deal, come after the real stuff. Stop trying to gain the world. Let go of yourself. Abandon yourself. Deny yourself for me and come and get me. I've got an image in my mind when I'm thinking this through. There's a wharf and a boat, okay? I even drew it on my page here. It's classic stick figure kind of thing, right? The wharf, the land, is kind of like me and my life and my pursuit of everything good in this world that I can get for myself and my own happiness. And Jesus is the boat. And the boat pulls right up to the wharf and he says, come with me. Let's go. I've actually got life for you. And we go, sweet. And we take one whopping big step into the boat and we go, that's awesome. I got myself some Jesus. This Jesus thing is making sense. I can see that that's where life is. But we make the mistake of leaving one foot on the wharf. But then what does Jesus do? He starts paddling the boat that way. And all of a sudden, I'm just doing the hectic splits, yeah? Can you picture it? I can't go any further apart than that. It's just super uncomfortable. But I reckon a lot of us are living, just picture my legs out here. I reckon a lot of us are trying to live that kind of life. Yeah, I've got Jesus, but I've still got one foot back here on the wharf trying to get life for myself. And we're like, this is good. But it's just not good. It's not comfortable. It's actually not life. It's not what Jesus is here going, let go. Just trust me. Just come with me. I've got life for you. I've got a whole ocean full of adventures where life consists. It's with me. It's just get me. Let go. Deny yourself. And I think we're left standing there. And maybe you've been a Christian for a long time, but you need to get your foot off the wharf. I'm just going to deny myself. I'm just going to let go. I don't actually know what that means, really, but in my mind, I'm feeling like I need to do that, and you need to take your foot off, and you need to go. You need to move. You need to trust him and go and get life with him. Some of you are still back here on the wharf, just looking at the Jesus thing, hearing it, and you're wrestling with it, investigating it, which is awesome. We love the fact that you're doing it, and you're thinking about taking the step. Do it. Do it. That's where life is. Live a little. If you've been a Christian for a while, ask this question. What would it look like for me to be more serious about denying myself? In what ways am I still trying to hang on to gaining the world for myself? Because I think it's hard for us to think of examples, actually, because we're just so engrossed in it. So I dare you to pray that prayer to God. God, would you show me areas in my life where I'm just still trying to hang on and get life for myself from the world? Would you show me that? And I believe God will be gracious. You pray those kind of prayers, they're dangerous prayers because God hears them and he answers them. And he starts to put his finger on things in your life and it's super uncomfortable. And if he was to put his finger on everything in your life where you're trying to get life for yourself in the world, it would just demoralize you. So he won't do that. He'll be gracious enough just to start pointing some things out that you need to let go of, that you need to move away from, and you need to move towards him and trust him. Pray that prayer. Ask God. And as you're asking him that, can I just throw a whole heap of examples at you about what it might mean? And actually, these are things I see many of you doing, and I'm encouraged as I see them. These are things that God sees you do, denying yourself. And I want to encourage you in them. I want to inspire you to self-denial. That is what I want to do. I want to throw a whole heap of examples at you. Some of them are not going to hit home for some of you. Other ones will. Just tune in. You grab one or two or three that makes sense for you of what you may need to do or what you may need to celebrate. Denying yourself for him. It begins, and it must begin, with that initial choice to surrender your will to his and commit and submit to him as Lord. That's where it all begins, that step. I'm going to do this. I'm going to let go and I'm going to go with him. I'm going to trust him. And then it continues every day in hundreds of ways. Hundreds of ways every day, subtle ways where you can deny yourself for him and get life. When I see you give time and attention to Bible reading and prayer when you're on your own, and I don't see all that, but I know God sees it, but I see evidence of it. When you get up early and you set aside time and you therefore sleep less, watch TV less, laze around less, you deny yourself for him. When you work with integrity in your job, even when your boss is not watching, when you work to honor God in your work, and what that means is you don't play the game like every other employee around you, and so you possibly don't get the promotion that they get and you kind of miss out on those things, you deny yourself for him. When you are friendly to someone new around here, and when you take that extra step to actually help them get connected and help them get settled, and you hang out with them a little bit, and in order to do that, you miss out on hanging out with your good old friends, which is the comfortable thing to do. When you do that, you deny yourself for him. When you are in a relationship and you choose to actually constrain yourself sexually because you're wanting to honor God with your body, and you end up missing out on providing the, you know, soothing the craving for an urge that you have, but you do that to honor God with your body, you are actually denying yourself for him, wanting to obey the scriptures. When you give your finances sacrificially to some kind of gospel need that is in front of you, and it hurts you to do it because it means you now can't spend those things on this list of things that you really like to get or really feel like you need to get, but you make that choice, you deny yourself for him. When you avoid a relationship with a girl or a guy that you know is the kind of relationship that's going to lead you astray and lead you away from God, and because you deny the relationship and say no to it, you find yourself missing out on the affection and connection that you see other people around you having, you deny yourself for him. When you say yes to a job at church and you take on a responsibility among the family here, and you know that's going to cost you time and it's going to cost you energy and it's going to sacrifice other things that you would like to be free to do when you want to do them, you deny yourself for him. When you decide to leave and you leave the comfort of a place you grew up and you go to do gospel ministry in another place around the world, when you go and decide to join a team to help plant a new church in our country, when you leave and you let go of all the comforts here, you deny yourself for him. I've got about 52 examples. Is that all right? And none of these are kind of black and white. They can all be mixed in with all kinds of different motives, but I'm just chucking it out there. When you open up your home and invite people in and you meet and you have growth group week in, week out in your home, but that costs you financially, it costs you having to clean the place up, it costs you having to put on a smiley, hospitable face week in, week out, you deny yourself for him. When you end up conjuring up the courage to speak about Jesus to your friends and family, when you go there, when you say those things, when you invite people to come along to stuff, and what it means is they say no and there's a bit of awkwardness in the relationship and weirdness because you went there, you deny yourself for him. When you forgive someone who's hurt you badly, and they haven't even asked to be forgiven, but when you forgive them and you don't treat them as their sin deserves, but you just swallow it and deal with it, you deny yourself taking revenge and you do it for him. When you say no to a party or a gig you'd really like to be at, because you know it's going to take you away from gathering with believers that you've committed to do, and that really hurts because all your friends are going to be there or everyone you want to be with are going to be there, when you miss out on that and you deny yourself, you do that for him. And can I actually say, those of you who've got kids, it's important that our kids see us oldies denying ourselves and missing out on stuff we'd really like to do. It's good that they see us doing it because it's good that they need to learn how to do it. If you've got kids and you're trying to raise them in the Lord, and I'm by far the expert here speaking, but I'll tell you what's going through my mind. I'm thinking, nah, I want there to be things that my kids really want to go to, but they don't, and they feel the pain of not going because to go would mean they would be ditching on a responsibility or ditching on a commitment to be at churn or youth or church. Now, I don't want to lay that as a burden, but I do want my kids to know that to follow Jesus means denying self and missing out on stuff sometimes, because as an adult following Jesus, that is actually what it means. To say no to drinking and not having a drink when you'd really like to have a drink, because there's a chance that if you were going to have a drink, there's a good chance that someone else who you know is going to be there is going to find that confronting or take that as a license to get drunk themselves. When you choose not to drink for the sake of that other person and you deny yourself, you deny yourself for him. Now, I'm going to stop there because otherwise we would go all night. But have any of those helped? Because I just want to say, I see all of those. They're just things I thought of that I see in you. Now, I don't see all of it, obviously, but I see those things in you. I see you denying yourself for him. Be encouraged. Those of you who have heard examples you haven't heard of, be encouraged by what your brothers and sisters are doing to deny themselves for Jesus. Be encouraged and step into that life. Now, I kind of want to wrap up by leaving you with three things. Three things that I trust are actually going to help you, help me, deny self for him. First one's this. Trust him. Trust Jesus. Trust that if you let go of yourself, that you lose yourself, that you'll actually save it, like he says, and you really get life. Trust him. He's good. He knows how to give you life. He knows how things work. He wants the very best for you. And he says, let go of yourself. It worked for him. He lets go of himself, goes to the cross, and 3 days later is raised again from the dead. And Jesus kind of puts that to us as the dynamic of the Christian life. Deny yourself now, and you will be raised. Here's the second thing. Instead of kind of flinching at the life of self-denial and going, I'll try and deny myself as much as I can handle it, think about embracing it, diving into it, actually seeing it as a lifestyle that you're called to live for him. Choose to be satisfied and content and confident in a life of self-denial, which is really a cross-shaped life. It's a life of humility where people won't notice what you do or who you are. It's a life that's probably going to be a little bit more unimpressive than you'd love. It's a life that no doubt will be lacking in the world's eyes in some ways. And I want to say, instead of flinching at it, can we embrace it? Can we embrace it? And I want you to be encouraged by Jesus' warning actually here, where he says, if you do the opposite of embrace it, if you're actually in any way ashamed of what I've done on the cross and you're ashamed at all to kind of step into that life, that's really dangerous. Have a look at verse 26. If anyone is ashamed of me and my words, just pause there. What's Jesus talking about? Jesus is saying, if you're ashamed of the fact that I went to the cross and denied myself, or if you're ashamed of my words to you here that you too need to follow me and deny yourself. If you're ashamed of me, hear the warning, it's huge. The Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his glory and in the glory of the Father and the holy angels. To be ashamed of the life of self-denial, to kind of shy away from it, is to actually be ashamed of Jesus himself. The nature of Christianity is to follow the one who denied himself. Embrace it. And here's the final one I want to give you, which always helps me. Perspective. Perspective on how long this life is helps. Because I can't help but to go to my default setting, which is to just think, oh, what if I got 80 years? Got to milk it. Got to get everything I can. But you step back from this if God gives you 80 years. Step back a little bit. Get some perspective on this life and view your life like this. And I've shown you this picture before, but I've just made it a little clearer. So, Tash, could you throw that up? This is your life, actually. It begins over there on the left-hand side and it continues. And it's got an arrow on the right-hand side because it goes on forever. You are an eternal being. You will live on for all eternity in either heaven or hell, but you will live forever. Get some perspective on this life you're living now. You see those two little lines on the left-hand side? That's me trying to represent how small this life is. 80 years seems like a long time, but it's just a flicker. It's just a moment in time. And we wrestle so hard to deny ourselves for these few short years. And Jesus just says, listen up, let go of yourself. I've got an eternity of joy for you. Deny yourself. You're just here for a moment. Let go. Stop going after all the things that everyone else is going after in this world. It's not where life is. Can you see the perspective? Does that help? Deny yourself in this life and get life in Jesus for all eternity. I'll leave it there. Let me pray. Father God, as we open up your scriptures and we hear you say these things to us, it is hard to hear in many ways to be told to deny ourselves. It's huge. But to see that that is exactly what Jesus did by going to the cross, and to hear that that's exactly what it means for us to follow him, for us to deny ourselves and pick up our cross and follow him. Lord, would you enable us to take these words seriously? Would you help us to not only get your title right, but understand what it means and press into this life? Lord, would you by your Spirit enable us to embrace this life of self-denial? Figure out what it means. Ask the question, what would it mean for me to be more serious about denying myself today and tomorrow? And Lord, would we be able to celebrate the life that we receive in you now because of self-denial and on into the future? Lord, would you take your glory in what you do with us? Amen.